Who do we have on the line? Hello?
They're saying that they're
Yes, turn off your radio, please. I don't know how many of you have been looking at this conflict that has arisen between the European Union and AstraZeneca over this question of how much of the vaccine the Europeans are getting. But, I mean, even among the powerful countries, you're having this kind of conflict over access to vaccine. And that means that countries like ours are going to have a much more difficult time. I mean, Barbados is trying to see if India will be kind enough to get us some of the vaccine, but it really is a rather tense situation in the general environment. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis, a blessed day to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
And thank you kindly, and your weekend and the station in Barbados. I wish for them a beautiful one as well. All the best they can manage, you know, because these are very troublesome times that we are going through now.
Whenever I hear you in this mood, I know Lash is sharing next.
When I call, as a Barbadian, I'm concerned about what's happening here with us. And, you know, I give my support when I see that it's due. And I'm concerned, I'm critical about things as well when that is necessary. So you just can't have it one word. And this, remember, this is no rocking chair ride to heaven, you know? This is rough seas. You know how the land ship does. I mean, it's a rough seas and that kind of thing. And
rough just, seas ahead.
Yes, there you are. I want to say here that I want to support the government in some of the things that it's doing here, and I want to share my concerns with some of the things that I also observe. And let me say here first, when I listened last night to Mr. Simmons when he was speaking, I would like and I would prefer that when they're speaking, that they're out front with what they mean, that is, and what is going to happen. Now, he spoke about those persons that are registered. Remember, he said there are about 1,500 persons that are registered selling liquor and so on, different figures. He said he has those and things of that sort. And he mentioned those who that may not be registered and so on, they can still call as well. Now, Mr. Ellis, I'll say here, I remember when they were talking some time ago about the beach vendors and those people who were renting chairs and jet skis and so on. They said that the Prime Minister said then that she was going to give $600 to those persons. But what they did not say to Barbadians and those persons that they were speaking to, that this $600 was meant for those persons who were registered and paying national insurance. That was never mentioned. And let me say here to you that those persons never got a cent, because in where I live, there are persons who are beach vendors and so on and renting chairs. They never got one single cent. When that announcement was made, there are those who I know that were joyous and happy when they heard about the $600. It never came. So I believe, and I remember the Minister of Labor said that this is something that the Barbadian person who are in business should be aware of, that they should get themselves registered. And I have no problem with that. That's right. I agree with that. But please, be out front and let them know what the situation is. Because I'm saying to you, I'm very doubtful that those persons who are not registered will get a single cent. That's the first thing. So I'm concerned with that. Can I go on, or you want to make a comment?
No, go ahead.
Right. I believe that the banks themselves have already had in place this distance and so on. The person, when you go to bank, the banks, they're leaving them outside and so on. So there's no crowding. So I believe that the banks already has protocol in place. So I do not think that it was, in my view, necessary to close down the bank. because then there's no crowd in there as such. People there, they have security guards that are telling people who can come in and the distances and so on. So I did not think that that was a necessary thing to do. That's one. And secondly, my view is that the shops, the small shops, could have done the same that the supermarkets are doing. That is 8 to 3. And that's it, close off. Because it would avoid the government having to pay that extra money out, because then we are under strain now and stress. So I thought that they could have had 8 to 3 or 9 to 3, whatever it is, and then they could have closed off, and that would have avoided the government having to pay out that money that they don't have. See what I'm saying? And even those that have their trades and so on, they could have had the same principle applied to them as well. But I think that what the government is doing, they're making an effort. Next thing I'm concerned about, now they said they have 300 persons that are going to go through the districts. I want to support that, but my concern about that is this, that when they go to the houses, and let's say when they take the swabs, because I believe that's what they're going to be doing as well, suppose there's some person afterwards that they've gone into those houses and somebody in there had a COVID. How do we know that they're not going to be taking it from house to house when they go around from place to place? We're not sure about that.
Of course, if you are asking people to participate in such an exercise, you would expect that those people would also be tested before you do that, because you don't want people to be taking it from house to house.
Yeah, but remember,
they would have to take those precautions as best as they can.
But remember this, Marcel, is when they come to my house or your house, they don't know who in there is affected. But when they come and they take the swabs and so on, then they have to take them to another. They have to go somewhere to another house to do all these tests all the way around.
I think the real issue here is, given what has happened with the testing regime, where so much has gone wrong with it, how can you assure us that the facilities will be able to absorb the kind of increase activity that this particular measure will produce?
That's right.
You know, what is it that you're going to be able to do differently at Best Dos Santos that will assure us that the delays that have been there would now be a thing of the past? Because that is crucial in all of that.
Yeah, because you are now going to be testing the entire nation. And when you have all these hundreds and thousands of persons that are going to be piling up, what is going to happen? So this is even though I can understand the reason for them doing it, to try to get the entire country tested to see where we're going, I don't know if they've taken into consideration the backup and the amount of testing that is going to have to be done for people then, because there are going to be people waiting for weeks and weeks to get back their own results. So these are going to be some very testing times for our nation. And I'll tell you this, I want to support the Prime Minister, and I really respect her when she said she consulted with the opposition leaders on this matter. I thought that was very noble, respectful, and the right thing to do, because we have a nation that has concerns, and this is a nation issue, and to involve all of those parties and organizations, I think that's was true. The right thing to do. Yeah, that was very noble, and I want
but
to...
But I am intrigued by one aspect of that. I am intrigued by... I consulted with Verla de Pisa. I consulted with the leader of the opposition, Bishop Atherley, and I consulted with the former Minister of Finance. I find that particularly intriguing. On what basis was he really consulted? Well, I mean, It comes across to me as though you're effectively saying that the Democratic Labour Party, one of two things, the Democratic Labour Party is in two factions, and he is representative of one, or you got something for him. Because to go and single him out in this way, to my mind, is unusual. And I hope, I'm sitting here waiting to see what's the next move. I'm really curious about it.
Mr. S.
Yes?
I would not, I don't think, for me, I don't see that. I see it.
I know you're going to see it.
No,
but I do, remember, though.
Remember this. You see, you've got to understand this, that Mr. Sinclair was the Minister of Finance of this country.
He wasn't the Prime Minister?
But you listen to me?
He wasn't the Prime Minister? And to all intents and purposes, he is not projecting himself as being that interested in politics anymore?
Well, here, listen to what I'm going to say to you. He was not a Prime Minister, but the Prime Minister, a former Prime Minister, has retired. So don't mention that. He's out of the picture altogether. So there was no point in concern with him.
You see, he's retired? Was there a formal announcement of political retirement?
Mr.
I can't remember. So I miss things from time to time. Did I miss that?
Have you heard, Mr.
Stewart? Let me ask you something. Don't you realize that Mr. Sinclair is in the same political status as Mr. Stewart is in?
No.
Both of them lost office, and both of them have basically not said anything about this political future, about retirement or anything. So I don't understand where you're going with that. But anyhow, we see things differently. Okay, good afternoon. Welcome to the continuation of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. And I wanted to share with you something out of the Jamaica Gleaner, where they are saying that Jamaicans who are not on the priority list for the COVID-19 vaccine that is being procured by the government might have the option of buying the jab on the private market. So that's Jamaica and their situation there with respect to the vaccine. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, ma'am.
Hi, Mr. Ellis. I was wondering, yes, if you could spare me a few minutes to make a couple of comments. This is Anne.
Sure.
Calling.
Yes.
I've been listening to the program from the get-go, and I wanted to make a few comments. First, I listened to the conferences by the Prime Minister as well as the one that we had yesterday, and I want to let Barbadians know that, the medicine is really coming through in these conversations. I welcome the changes. There are a lot of them, and many of them are really exactly the policy changes that we need to combat the spread that we're having here. One of the things I want to say is that for many Barbadians, everybody is entitled to an opinion, etc. I did hear a comment from someone in a different sector outside of healthcare saying that they wanted more time to see, gauge how bad things are before they would advise a shutdown. And I just wanted to say in response to that, by the time the public sees what, is bad, things are even 10 times worse. So when you start hearing that there are 10 people in the critical care unit, it's almost like the horse is bolting going down the street already. So by the time the public feels that things are bad and we needed a shutdown 2 weeks or 3 weeks before that, right? So I really want to make that clear. And for many of the people who I heard someone say, if we did a referendum, most Barbadians don't want to shut down. And I don't mean to be dismissive, but when you're on a plane and the plane is about to crash, you do not have a referendum with the passengers, the flight attendants, and the pilot. It doesn't necessarily work like that in a crisis. Of course, the government has to listen to people. We have to understand, the pain that people are feeling out there. But there is, the people who need to be in the cockpit right now are the public health officials who are going to be advising the government. And I think as a physician, listening to the conference that the PM had, as well as what was said yesterday, I have to say that I think that the plane is probably flying in the right way going forward now. The extension of the quarantine, the mandatory masks, reducing the capacity on transport things. And regarding the issue of closing supermarkets, first, the supermarkets are not open because, you know, government is favoring big business. The whole purpose of the shutdown is to have the minimum number of openings, including workers having to go to their workplaces. And a supermarket allows for the largest number of people to be served with the least number of openings. Secondly, it makes it easier to police. And I do agree with the opening of the mini-marts in the countryside because, you know, even if we have the mini-marts, the district police stations will know which mini-marts are open. They can do a drive-by and make sure that no liming is happening. And when they pass any other area in any other community and see people, there's no excuse. The more places are open, and I'm telling, I heard a lot of people calling in and saying, well, you know, this thing, you can sit down and think of 1,000 things that you might want to purchase in the next 2 weeks. Computer parts, you know, a book, anything. But that's not, I think that these thoughts are not, you know, weighing in the fact that we have a very serious health crisis going on right now. Everybody needs to put themselves in quarantine mode. And I normally don't wade into economics because I'm not an economist or a banker or any of those things. But sometimes doctors do have to think about economics because the drug service requires money to buy things. And I want Barbadians to know all of these different sectors. Yes, people are going to hurt during these 2 weeks because they're closed. But in terms of asking for compensation for the government, every penny that this government pays out to people who are not in desperate need is going to be money taken away from education. It's going to be money taken away from the drug service. So, you know, yes, people are losing money, but the compensation probably needs to be on a needs basis and not just, well, you know, I closed and so therefore I need money. If you're closed and you have $50,000 on the bank, please, you know, don't ask the government for compensation. Everybody who needs help probably should be on a needs basis, whether it's the individual or the business section. You know, but please, I'm, you know, I think if people watched Dr. Ford speak yesterday, doctors generally do not ask people to pray. So when you get have the doctors at the point where they doctors pray, doctors are religious, but when doctors get to the point where they say on television that I would like you guys to pray and to do this thing, I would love to hammer home to Barbadians that this is not just a matter of sitting down and thinking about everything that I feel this should be open and I feel that should be open and I'm going to lose some money. The economic crisis here is inevitable, David. We are a tourism dependent country, and tourism as a global sector is destroyed. So the economic crisis is inevitable. And what the policy changes right now are trying to achieve is to make sure that we don't take Barbadian lives down with the economic crisis. And I'm not, when I listen to the people, you know, giving their opinions, I feel like that part is missing. I think Barbadians really don't understand how difficult it is. What the policies are supposed to prevent us from seeing, you know, the devastation where then lay people can say, boy, I think we should shut down. When everybody in Barbados can see that we need to shut down, it's too late.
One of the things that I have noted here, though, is that there are a lot of people who do not understand this talk about how contagious the UK variant is. From where you sit, what can you tell people to get them a better understanding of what is involved here?
So when they're talking about these variants being contagious, so it starts with the mutation, and they looked at the virus, and, you know, Dr. Larder would be 10 times better discussing this, but viruses have different, like, spikes and components on the cells that allow them to enter the cells inside of the body, inside of a human's body. So when these, some, you know, components, the components that allow you to enter somebody's, the cells in somebody's nose or in somebody's lungs, some, the better those spikes are at opening the door to get into the cell, then we can say that this thing is more infectious. So in other words, you probably need less virus particles to set up an infection because more of them are successful at getting inside. And this is where the comment, and I think this comment was made before when we spoke about the fact that at this point in time, we can't be sure how effective the mitigation factors are, the things that we were suggesting, like wear masks, stay 6 feet. You know, we know that those things work and we impress upon people to continue them, but we don't know how well they work against these things. And this is why we are so much more desperate to break the transmission. And something else, too, in recognizing, when you have, and you see this in the UK, you see it in the US, there's a lag time between, you know, from the number of people infected to the number of people hospitalized and to the number of people dying. So, you know, while people might say, well, you know, we don't have a lot of deaths, even though I think that our death rate, you know, for January is starting to be, you know, concerning as well. But, you know, when you leave it creeping silently around this community, more people start having to have symptoms, and then more people end up being severely ill, and then more people are going to die, and that takes time. So this is why I was saying, by the time people realize, wow, a lot of people are dying, you know, it is already completely out of control. So we are at the stage now where we're seeing a lot of positive cases. And in fact, when I heard Dr. Ford speak, I think he said 10 people were in their critical care unit, or maybe one of them had died, but so maybe about 9. So you're going to see first a rise in the number of positives, which is what we have seen. Then you're going to see a rise in the number of people who need medical intervention in their isolation. And then you're going to start to see people dying. And so, as I said, by the time we start to see people dying, that's, you know, the horse is all out the gate. So we cannot, people in the public have to trust that. And I heard Dr. Williams from BAMP, she spoke on it as well. I agree with her 1,000%. Barbadians cannot wait until the horse is out the gate to say, you know what, actually, yes, I agree that we should shut down. By the time you see that, it's already very late. The numbers from Wednesday, 34 out of 363, that's 9.4% positive rate. And I don't remember if people remember the numbers, like in Germany and Sweden, well, not Sweden, Germany and those places are doing well. Their positive rates were around 1, 2%. It meant that they were testing extensively and a lot of people are not positive. Our positive rate on Wednesday was 9.4%. Now, it is not good practice in America and those places like Florida and Texas where deaths, they started to go to 11%. 13%, and by then they were having widespread deaths, hospitals overwhelmed. We don't need to wait to that point to do something. And 2 weeks, you know, people said, so one caller said we should do 1 month. If the government's having such a hard time convincing Barbadians to do 2 weeks, how would we convince them to do, and I say we, but I'm not a part of the government action, but, you know, how are you going to convince Barbadians to do a month? Then people will want the computer store open, and they want the auto shop open, and they want everything open. David, the only thing worse than a lockdown is a lockdown that is not successful because people do not cooperate. So the worst thing that could happen to Barbados right now is if Barbadians, because of all of the exceptions and exemptions that they want, and they think this person is going to have it hard, if we don't cooperate with this, what will happen is that we will have gone through this lockdown and not achieved results. So all I can do at this point is, because the public policy is now there, so the ball really is now in our court. The public policy has changed, right? And I think the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners support it. I certainly support the policy changes. So now we need to get the buy-in from the public. Everybody, I will not say don't, you know, to muzzle people. I'm very glad that we have brass tacks, I like to call, as you can see. But Barbadians, I mean, try not to inspire people to not cooperate with these public policy changes. This is a huge effort, a huge expensive effort on the part of the government to try to get this thing under control. And I'm practically begging Barbadians to comply with the effort.
I got a contribution here from Dr. Larder, and let me say that I have really been very happy to have had contributions from you and Dr. Larder on this program to help educate people and to speak from a position of not being within the government of Barbados at that technical level. We needed to have this kind of input from people like yourself. And I shudder to think what would have happened if you didn't make yourself available and Dr. Lowry didn't. He says here, the real difference between the regular virus and the variants is that it's been shown that people infected with UK variant can have up to 10,000 times as much virus in their nose and throat regions. This is likely a major contributor to the increased infectivity and spread. Additionally, the variants seem to be able to bind onto cells more tightly and gain entry.
Yes.
The additional worry is the potential evasion of the vaccines that are being developed. So that's the virologist giving that assessment and why we need to take this thing far more seriously.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, even I think even with the UK variant, and I think Dr. Williams, the epidemiologist and president of BAMP, explained that, you know, at first they were saying that, you know, it's not more deadly. I think they've changed their tune on that a bit. But even if it were not more deadly, if it infects, if something infects 10 people and only 10% of people die, that's one person. But if it's, if it infects now 100 people and it's still only killing 10% of them, now that's 10 people, right? So the percentage is the same, but if it's going to infect more people, you're still going to have more people dying. So I beg Barbadians, no one is losing the fact that this is going to hurt people's pockets. It might be more than that. It could be, and I think these people need to reach out to the government for the assistance. But please, you know, comply with the policies, and let's have a successful 2 weeks down. You know, people, the more things are open, the more legitimate reasons for people to go outside. They're not at work, and so they go out and they do this and they pick up five things. The supermarkets are open, but if you do not need to go into the supermarket, yes, you like to have bread every, you know, in the house all the time. But, you know, if you have shopped already and you run out of bread in the middle of this 2 week period, and you don't go into the supermarket to buy, you know, a couple of things. See what you can do without a couple of things. The supermarket now is just absolutely for people, you know, people who have to go. The whole idea is everybody be quarantined at home for these 2 weeks. It gives a chance for the contact tracing to get a handle on it. It gives a chance, and I saw that the part about increased testing, that is important because our positive test rate is very high, so it might mean we need to step up on the testing, and I think that I heard from the Prime Minister that this was going to be done, so that, again, I really support that measure as well. But if, and also, the 14 days is useful because all of those people that we do not know are positive, because they do not know that they're positive, that 14-day period at home also helps that they stay at home and they pass through the infective period of their disease. When they reemerge, there are less people actually reemerging positive to spread the disease. So, you know, when people are talking about the shops and the small man, from what I can understand, nothing is being done to favor big man versus small man. It's how can we get the absolute bare minimum, you know, in terms of food and supplies out there with the least number of openings.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your contribution. Always welcome.